You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead.
How many of you guys have had that friendship, right? Maybe you know what I'm talking about, that friendship. That friendship of the person that taught you how to break into houses. Anybody had that friendship? Yeah. That friendship that you first tried cigarettes with, right? I'm trying not to make eye contact with my mom. that friendship that you once stole clothes from the mall. Right? Like there's always those friends. Maybe you had one of these, that friends that you listened to Hanson's Mbop too many times with, right? Yeah. I pegged you, Tandrick, as a Hanson Mbop listener. I gotcha. Well, today, like we talk about those friends and what it looks like to choose our friends wisely. We've been talking about how we've been one friend away and one community away and the foundation of friendship, but what does that look like when it plays out in our lives? As we round the corner in this series, week number 4 of You've Got a Friend in Me, we've been talking about all these things and the importance of friendship. But what does it look like to choose our friends wisely? Because the Bible warns us about these types of decisions because they're big decisions. And I'm going to try to do everything I can not to end up in the baptismal today, and we'll see if that happens. But to choose our friends wisely, Proverbs 12:26, it says this. It says, "The godly give good advice to their friends. The wicked lead them astray." How many of you would honestly say that you've had some wicked friends, right? Like, yeah, okay, some nods, some hands, right? You've had some of those friends. The godly give good advice to the friends. The wicked lead them astray. Now, notice what it doesn't say. It doesn't say avoid people. It doesn't say isolate. It doesn't say only hang out with perfect people. What it says to me there is to choose carefully. Right? That there's going to be all those different types of people in our lives, but the people we choose, the people we surround ourselves with, the people that we spend the most time with, they're going to shape the direction of our life. And as you think about the direction of your life, like where it's going, where it's been, where it's headed, this could be answering. Like this sermon today could be answering why it's headed in the wrong direction. It could be why nothing's changing. It's because you're surrounding yourself with the same people that do the same things. And so whether you're following along in the app, you can take notes in there, you can see all the scriptures, you can see all the points, you can answer all the questions that are in there. Take notes. Lean in. Maybe stay for both services if this really is hitting home for you today. Or maybe rewatch the podcast this week. But the big idea for today is that we can love everyone, right? Like we're supposed to do that. But what about only letting the right people actually shape our future? And how do we draw the line between those two? Loving everyone, but only letting the right people shape our future. Because I'm gonna be honest, I've been confused about this. If God says love everyone, then even this person, then I need to help them. I need to draw them in. In John 13:34, it says, "So now I'm giving you a new commandment." Like, who does this Jesus think he is, right? Right? That's what the Pharisees thought, right? They had the commandments. They had all the laws. But now this Jesus guy is coming in. He says, "Now I'm giving you a new commandment. Love each other just as I have loved you." You should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. Man, not how we fight back in the comments on Facebook. Not how we get mad at one church and talk bad about the other. See, many times I've assumed that loving people means giving everyone the same amount of access, the same influence, the same seat in our lives. But when you look at the life of Jesus, it's a little bit different because Jesus loved the crowds, right? We've seen him feed the thousands, right? We see him interacting. We see him going into crowds. We see him teaching at the temple. We see him healing in the crowds. We see him feeding the crowds. But really, he didn't give everyone the same level of access, right? If you look at the different levels of the people that were around Jesus, right? Reading the stories, you see the crowds crowding around him. You see that the house too full so they can't bring their lame friend in that can't walk, so they have to cut the hole through the ceiling, right? We see him gathering and going and teaching, and then all of them need something to eat. Jesus, well, we need to send them away. And Jesus is like, no. Let's feed them. Let's get that boy's happy meal, and let's make that last. There was the crowds. Now, where you land on the number of disciples is interesting, right? Some would say, oh, there was 12 disciples, right? Well, those were the apostles. Some would say, you know, there was 120, right? And that when Jesus got up and he was talking about, you know, this is eat of my flesh, drink of my blood, that then they were like, oh, that zombie talk there, Jesus. I don't know about all that. And so they kind of dispersed. Some would say that there were 500 disciples because that's who he came back and revealed himself to once he came back from the grave. But there was the crowd, there was the 500, there was 120, the 72, right? Like down to 12. We know about those. But what about that inner circle? The three that were closest, the three that when he went to the garden to pray, he said, hey, you come with me. The three that he would get alone with, the three that he would teach. Those three were Peter, James, and John. Not because he loved the others less, but because influence must be chosen wisely. See, last week we talked about this thing called Connect Four. The game is still there because I forgot to put it away. And we talked about having three people around you that you do life with. We even said that we would like to take even the Connect groups that we're doing right now. We're still doing those, but what if instead of taking away, what if we added even just a smaller group? Not another night. And sometimes you can't commit to another night. And so what if we started it even smaller and just with four people and said, I want to text with four people. I want to get together with four people at a coffee shop. I want to walk through this life with somebody. I need some people to be vulnerable with, to talk real to grow in friendship. I need people to sharpen me, to speak into me. See, Jesus had Peter, James, and John. Proving that you can love everybody. It's really easy to say that Jesus loved everybody, right? When somebody dies on a cross for somebody's sins, that would really clarify the dying for everybody. But can you love everybody but only have a few people that have a deep influence in your life? If you're interested in being a part of that whole Connect Four thing, whether you're interested in helping lead others, right? Because there's people that are signing up almost weekly these days for the Following Jesus book, stepping into that relationship, and they need somebody that'll walk alongside of them. That could be you. You may be like, well, I don't know everything. I can't answer all their questions. No, you don't have to answer all their questions. Are you one step farther than them? Trust me, you'll learn a lot more teaching than just listening. And so, some of you know something about me. Jordan knows it, Chrissy knows it, Mandy knows it. Zach, which is standing right over here, knows it. And Maddie, which was playing the piano here this morning. Each and every summer, one of my favorite things to do is to be a barista. And here lately, since McDonald's got rid of their free 99-cent or their 99-cent coffee in their app. Darn them. And my wife said, you know, honey, I really don't like McDonald's coffee. Can you swing by Starbucks? And I was like, oh, it's lots of bucks. And I don't want to do that. And so we have a date morning breakfast every single Friday. And so this week, I decided that I was going to start making her some coffee, right? I was even looking for the fancy espresso machine because every summer, I get to be a barista at a summer camp. It's a fun gig. I get to make up drinks. I do campfire s'mores and firewood embers and pump a lot of cinnamon and thin mints and get to come up with just fun recipes for drinks. And so it reminds me a lot of when I was in Bible college. It wasn't coffee drinks though that I was serving. I was a bartender at a hotel. And so it's a great rush of adrenaline when you have 30, 40 people all waiting on their coffee drinks. And but it's probably not as bougie as your coffee, but it does have a ton of sugar in it. And that's what campers like. But we all know, right, that coffee, well, if you're making a drink, one of the funnest things to do is line the cups. It's what I choose to do. Line it with chocolate, right? And you gotta like start it at the top and then it drizzles down. Sorry, we didn't have any clear cups, but it just drizzles down and make all that stuff. And so I'll do that and then you got to make the caramel ones too, right? And so you got to mix it in. It's like diabetes every morning at summer camp, right? Like it goes great. And so you do that and you get that. And then I've got a whole frother machine because I'm not patient enough to do the whole wand thing. And so I have the frother machine and I will take that and I'll put the syrup. Just one of the tricks that an actual barista told me is if you put the syrup in with the milk as you heat it up, it makes the drink sweeter. Just saying, and just in case you needed any barista tricks for your house. This coffee cup represents our lives here this morning, right? Probably more my wife's life with all the polka dots and stuff on it, right? And this coffee cup was created for a purpose. It's double lined, right? And so it protects your hands from getting too hot. And we know each and every one of us have been created with a purpose, right? And God puts the special ingredients with us. And so we add some of our flavors. We've got our cup that are lined. And so now we take our coffee. Sorry, I didn't want to blow anything here this morning or make too big of a mess. And so I just brewed the coffee in advance. And we got the coffee. And then you can't forget, of course, the creamer. Now I had to go with our creamer that is located here, but I did break out the Snickers one. Sorry if I stole it before you got to use it. And in order for it to be a really good coffee drink, you got to have a ton of creamer. And like I said, right, like you've got the coffee frother and stuff, the frothing machine going, but I don't have the frothing machine that's going here. So this is great, right? You've got caramel, you've got Snickers flavoring, you've got chocolate, and it's already pretty good. But you know, I mean, if it's a real coffee drink, right? At least for those of you that pay over $7 for your coffee drink, it's got to have whipped cream on top, right? And so you do that, and it's amazing, right? Awesome, really good stuff. Everything's going great. Now it's amazing how one thing can just change an entire drink, right? One thing can make it sweeter, one thing that can make it better. And I think this is left over from Jordan in the kitchen. And so I found some avocado cilantro, and I know my wife really loves avocados. She loves cilantro, and so I want to be a blessing to my wife here this morning, and I want to combine these flavors, and doesn't that just look amazing? Anybody want this besides my wife?
Nope.
honey. You want to take a sip? Here you go. She's like, are you rude?
If you let me get my cash first.
See, my wife was really excited when it was covered in chocolate, when it had ice in it. It was beautiful. See, you guys were with me. She was with me, seeing the caramel, seeing the chocolate, seeing the cream go in, and seeing that whipped cream. She was excited that her husband was making a drink for her, but then there was that one thing that changed everything. How many times does that happen in our friendships? That one thing, that one influence changes everything. 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, "Don't be fooled by those who say such things, for bad company corrupts good character." Bad company corrupts good character. And the truth is that our life, it tastes like the influences that we allow in it. The things that are going in, and that's why who we run with matters. Who we allow close to us matters. We've said you can be one community away from changing your direction in life. You could be one friend away. Some of you are thinking about that one friend right now, right? You're thinking about that influence, that person that you spend hours with on the phone, that person that you get together with, and you can be fine. You can be even good, not be tempted to even stumble and fail. But every time you get together with this one person. See, the power of friends is choices, right? It changes. It shapes things, right? Our thinking, our habits, our priorities, and eventually it changes our faith. Craig Rochelle says, "Show me your friends and I'll show you your future." You're like, but Pastor, Jesus loved everyone. Yes, he did. But he walked closely with just a few. Because the people closest to you are going to influence where you end up. Well, Pastor, does that mean I can't have friends? Well, not at all. But what are the boundaries? What are the boundaries in those friendships? What are the safeguards? What rails have you put in place? There's two things that I determined long ago. I decided long ago to never to walk. Anyway. Two things I won't let my friends do. Right? Now if you could fill in that blank with the word friends, I think it goes bigger than just friends, but since we're in the series, You Got a Friend in Me, I'm kind of talking about friends. But it could be spouse. It could be enemies. It could be workplaces. It could be careers. But we'll keep it for friends today. Two things I won't let my friends do. Number one, distract me from God's plan. Distract me from God's plan. In Matthew 16, we see Jesus, this happens to him as well. In Matthew 16, verses 21 through 23, it says, "From then on, Jesus began to tell his disciples plainly that it was necessary for him to go to Jerusalem," right? It's necessary for him to go to Jerusalem and that he would suffer many terrible things at the hands of the elders, the leading priests and the teachers of the religious law, that he would be killed, right? It would kind of be this moment in the life of Jesus and the disciples. "Hey guys, I just need to let you know that in a few weeks, things are going to go down. Things are going to happen. And you're not going to like the results." He said that he would be killed. But then on the third day that he would be raised from the dead, by the time you get to verse 22, it says, "But Peter took him aside and began to reprimand him." Anybody else reprimand Jesus? Like, you think you got the cojones to reprimand Jesus? But he reprimands him for saying such things. "Heaven forbid, Lord," he said, "this will never happen to you," right? We know Peter's going to put a stop to it, right? "I'm not going to let this happen to you." And Jesus, though, By the time you get to 16:23, it says, Jesus turned to Peter and said, "Get away." I left it in red for you here this morning. "Get away from me, Satan. You are a dangerous trap for me. You are seeing things merely from a human point of view, not from God's." Do we have those in our life? That we need to create some distance because they're a dangerous trap. Every time that we're with them, we're messing up. Every time that we're with them, we're relapsing. Every time that we're with them, our marriage is getting weaker and weaker and weaker. The temptations grow more and more. It says you're seeing things merely from a human point of view. That can happen a lot, right? Oh yeah, you should take that advancement. Well, it's going to take me out of my family. It's going to pull me away from the things that are important the most to me. Yeah, but you can make more money, right? We've had that conversation here. Like, how many people would move for $1,000 away from Lafayette? How many people would move for $5,000, $10,000, $40,000 extra dollars? And hands go up all over the place. But is it taking us away from what God's doing in our lives? Many times we'll see things from a human point of view, not from God's. See, Peter loved Jesus. Peter had good intentions. Peter was even there in the top three, right? We would say that Peter was close, but good intentions are not the same as godly intentions. Peter was trying to protect Jesus from suffering. But Jesus knew that the cross was the mission and that nothing should get in between him and the cross. And in that moment, Jesus shows us something important, that even well-meaning friends can distract us from God's plan. That's why we got to be careful. Who has the loudest voice in our life? In 2014, that voice was getting louder and louder. For me, I was working out at Subaru. We moved here in 2010 to start the church. By 2012, we got it going in our house. And by summer of 2012, we got this building, right? This building was like walking around in your dad's shoes. I don't know if you ever remember those moments. And you can't stand up straight. You're trying to figure out what to do, how to do it. Had a service with like seven people, tears running down my face, and they're like, "Oh, Jesus touched you today." I said, "No, I was mad that there was only seven people. Why didn't my wife show up to church today?" But by the time 2014 was rolling around, they had been promoted to a supervisor role. That came with it its own challenges. Right? Now you were responsible. There was a lot more pressure. There was more responsibility. There was more money, more problems, right? That theologian said that one, right? And honestly, some of the days where I was wondering if it was worth it all. One day I sat down and opened up my computer and there was a beautiful sticky note that centered me. And it was, "Remember why we moved here." See, my wife had seen the pressures building. She had seen the responsibilities building. She had seen the frustration. She had heard plenty of them when I came home from work and another idiot wrecked another car. Like, how hard is it not to wreck a car or lock keys in a car or fail the drug test or all types of things? I opened up and it said, "Remember why we moved here." She was there. She was reminding me of the mission, why we were here in the first place. Those are the kinds of friends that I'm talking about that are going to point us back to God's plans in our lives, that we're vulnerable enough to speak those out, and then they can be a Nathan to us, like we've talked in this series, and speak them back to us to confirm that we're headed in the right direction. Or that we're headed in the wrong direction. See, someone who points you back to God, not calling you away from it, right? Because we got those. There's going to be plenty of those in this world. says, oh, you don't need that. Oh, you don't need them. Oh, you'd be better off without that. Someone constantly and consistently pulls you away from God's plans, that's not the voice that should be the closest to you. Should not be the one that you're letting guide your life. That's the first thing. Second thing that I'm not letting my friends do is pull me back into sinful habits. See, in the story of Joseph, we see that, right? We see Potiphar's wife in Genesis 39, 7 through 9. It says, and Potiphar's wife soon began to look at him lustfully. Hey, Jojo, how you doing? Come and sleep with me, she demanded. But Joseph refused. He said, look, my master trusts me with everything in his entire household. How could I do such a wicked thing? It would be a great sin against God. Joseph doesn't negotiate. He doesn't linger. He doesn't, oh, well, let's try this out. Let's see where this goes. He doesn't try to manage the temptation. He runs. But when it talks about, I mean, the Bible uses some pretty strict words. Like if your right hand is causing you to sin, to cut it off. We got a cleaver back in the kitchen today if anybody needs help with that. See, he runs. See, sometimes the most spiritual thing that you can do, just like Jesus did with Peter, is create some distance. Get behind me. You're not the one that's going to speak into this situation. Now, please hear me clearly, because many would take this message and say, well, I just never need to see them again. I'm just going to write them off. And please don't do that. I said change the level of access. Sometimes the environments need to change. Right? Oh, we don't just go hang out at the bar, because every time I do, I end up drunk. What if there's a better environment to be hanging out with? Like a National Chili Dog Sunday, right? Like, who doesn't? Because if God delivered you from something, maybe you shouldn't walk back into it just to keep somebody else comfortable. If God set you free from addiction, maybe the bar isn't where you should be every weekend. God pulled you out of destructive habits. And maybe you need some distance between those that are trying to pull you back in. That's not arrogance, that's wisdom. That's allowing that access. It's boundaries with love, right? Because even when there's boundaries, we can still love, right? Love people the way Jesus loved us. That's what we saw in the verse. And Jesus loved us while we were still sinners. He accepted us. He invited us. Jesus sat at tables. For anyone who thinks that Christians can't have friends who aren't believers, I'm not saying that at all. Jesus settled that one. He loved the sinners. He ate with sinners. He served the sinners, but he never let the sinners steer his life. I believe that's balance. That's boundaries with love. That's distance with grace. That's truth with compassion. You can't write them off, because you may be the only Jesus that they will ever see. You get to represent him. And sometimes the friendship needs to exist in healthy environments. There's healthier places, places you would take your kids to. Some of you maybe in other places. Environments that protect you from falling back into the same pits that God has delivered you out of. But Pastor, what happens when there's conflict, right? Because you got to talk about conflict every time you talk about relationships, right? There's another issue that always shows up when people start doing life together. That's conflict. If you're friends with somebody, probably 24 hours. Like 24 hours, you spent 24 hours together, you're going to have conflict. There's misunderstandings. There's feelings that get hurt. There's assumptions that get made. There's levels of friendship that they thought you were and that you thought they were. And Woody talks about a snake being in his boot, right? There's a snake in my boot. That's when Buzz Lightyear shows up, right? And Woody's jealous. Something has bit him and the room is suddenly divided. There's competition, there's misunderstanding, there's tension. The toys all start taking sides. And I don't know what side I'm supposed to stand on right now. Can I go over here? But eventually they discover something important. Important? I don't know where that word came from. They discover that they're not enemies. They're on the same team. When they finally work together, then they make it through their adventures. They finally make it home. And if we're honest, sometimes church can feel like a little bit of Andy's room. Someone new shows up, somebody new gets the attention, somebody gets an opportunity that you wanted, and suddenly people start whispering, there's a snake in my boat. There's something that's causing division. There's someone that I don't trust. There's someone that I'm frustrated with. There's someone that I'm upset with. That would never happen in church. And sometimes it just happens because people mess up. People make mistakes. People say things. There's things that are accidental. There's also sometimes things that are intentional. That's what happens when imperfect people do life together. Somebody gets hurt. The real enemy loves when believers divide. And Jesus gave us, though, a better way. Jesus told us to handle it instead of whispering about somebody, to go to somebody. That's what Jesus' own words in Matthew 18, 15. It says, if another believer sins against you, go privately and point out that offense. Talk that out. If the other person listens and confesses, you've won that person back.
Well, I tried that.
I know, you probably did. And it says to go with more people and with more people. And then if you can't handle, if the dispute is so heated, it says bring it in front of the church and work that out. Sorry, I've got new insoles in these shoes and I'm getting used to them. They're weird. It doesn't say gossip. It doesn't say divide. It says go talk. Go listen. Go reconcile. Because healthy communities, healthy friendships are built on reconciliation. And I want to be a healthy community. So that's where we finish off today. It's a 5-week series. So we're not just ending it all in 5 weeks. But next week, as we finish this off, we finish off, You've Got a Friend in Me. Now Jesus, we'll talk a little bit about Palm Sunday. And he was the one that was willing to ride in. But Romans 15:7, I believe, talks and gives us a great reminder. As we walk this friendship out, as we decide on who's closest with us, and if we don't have anybody that's closest with us, as we decide to enter into relationship with others. In Romans 15:7, it says, therefore, accept each other just as Christ has accepted you, so that God will be given the glory. See, Jesus accepts us as and when we were broken, just as we are. When we were sinful, when we were far from him. He didn't distance himself from us. He moved towards us. And that's what I'm asking us as a church to do, to move towards one another, to do life together, to be vulnerable with one another, to trust, to remember that we're on the same team. Not isolate, not make this just a one Sunday, maybe a month. But to do as Jesus did. To choose reconciliation over rejection. That's what Jesus did. To choose grace over distance. To choose redemption over condemnation. See, if it didn't come naturally to Jesus, if he had to decide, then I think we're going to have to as well. Even Jesus, the people that he brought closest to him, they're the ones he's calling Satan. Then we've got to decide to do that too. So I would encourage us, can we be the type of people that love everyone? That we're the ones that are patient, right? That are kind, right? Jesus sitting at that Last Supper table and passing the cup and the bread to Judas. He was willing to feed him too. To be patient, to be kind, to be compassionate. Even if they cut the line on National Chili Dog Day, I'm saying it's okay. So can we first love everyone? Secondly, can we choose wisely who shapes our future? Not everyone belongs in that inner circle, but we need that inner circle. We need to protect our faith. Those that will protect that faith, help you protect that calling. Then thirdly, as we look at these friends, there's going to be conflict. As we enter into relationship, there's going to be conflict. Can we not gossip? Can we not divide? Can we not let the enemy come in? Not avoid one another, but actually talk it out. Listen to the other side. Be willing to forgive. I believe healthy friendships and healthy communities are built on reconciliation. So as we close off today, who's shaping our lives? Who are we allowing to speak into? Is it just anybody and everybody who will answer a text message? Are we letting social media shape it? It's got an algorithm. Who has our ears? Who influences our decisions? Because the direction of our lives is often determined by the people closest to us. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you for today. Thank you for this time that we've had to look at what a true and real friendship is and what it looks like through the lens of Jesus. Give us wisdom in our relationships. Help us love people deeply while choosing influence wisely. Give us the courage to set boundaries. And when conflict comes up, help us pursue reconciliation the way you taught us to. God, I pray that our church would be a place where grace wins, where forgiveness flows, and where relationships are restored. And that as we leave this place, that we would be representatives of you, of your love, that we would sit at tables and speak the way you spoke, love the way you loved, and accept those that you accepted. Lead us and guide us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.